Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8. Questions by King Parikshit. Text 23. Yata Atma Tantra Bhagavan Vikridati Atma Mayaya Vishrijya Va Yata Mayam Udasate Sakshivat Vibhu Yatatmatantro Bhagavan Vikridatyatma Mayaya Visrijya Vayata Mayam Udasate Sakshivad Vibhu Yatatmatantro Bhagavan Vikridatyatma Mayaya Visrijya Vayata Mayam Udaste Sakshivad Vibhu Yatatmatantro Bhagavan Vikridyatmatma Mayaya Vishrijya Vayata Mayam Udaste Sakshivad Vibhu Yatatmatantro Bhagavan Vikridatyatma Mayaya Vishrijya Vayata Mayam Udaste Sakshivad Vibhu
Yathatmatantro Bhagavan Vikridatyatma Mayaya Visrijya Vayata
Mayam
Udaste Sakshivad Vibhu
Yathatmatantro Bhagavan
Vikridatyatma
Mayaya
Yata
as
Atmatantra.
Atmatantra.
Independent.
Independent.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
The Personality of Godhead.
The Personality of Godhead.
Vikriyati.
Vikriyati.
Enjoys his pastimes.
Enjoys his pastimes.
Atmamayaya.
Atmamayaya.
By his internal potency.
By his internal potency.
Visrijya.
Visrijya.
Giving up.
Giving up.
Va.
Va.
As also.
As also.
Yata.
Yata.
As he desires.
As he desires.
Mayam.
Mayam.
The external potency.
The external potency.
Buddhaste.
Buddhaste.
Remains.
Remains.
Sakshivat.
Sakshivat.
Just as the witness.
Just as the witness.
Vibhu.
Vibhu.
The Almighty.
The Almighty.
Translation. The independent personality of Godhead enjoys his pastimes by his internal potency, and at the time of annihilation gives them up to the external potency, and he remains a witness to it all. Please repeat. The independent personality of Godhead.
The independent personality of Godhead.
Enjoys his pastimes by his internal potency.
Enjoys his pastimes by his internal potency.
And at the time of annihilation.
At the time of annihilation.
Gives them up to the external potency.
Gives them up to the external potency.
And he remains a witness to it all.
And he remains a witness to it all.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead and fountainhead of all other incarnations, is the only independent person. He enjoys his pastimes by creation as he desires and gives them up to the external potence, external energy at the time of annihilation. By his internal potency only, he kills the demon Putana. Even though enjoying his pastimes in the lap of his mother Yashoda. And when he desires to leave this world, he creates the pastimes of killing his own family members, Yadukula, and remains unaffected by such annihilation. He is the witness of everything that is happening, and yet he has nothing to do with anything. He is independent in every respect. Maharaj Parikshit desired to know more perfectly, for a pure devotee ought to know well. Translation again. The independent personality of Godhead enjoys his pastimes by his internal potency, and at the time of annihilation gives them up to the external potency, and he remains a witness to it all. This verse is one of many that highlights the mysterious nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which seems to be full of contradictions. He creates his pastimes and he destroys them. He creates them in his internal potency, and then he gives them up to the external energy. He witnesses everything, but he has nothing to do with anything. So the subject of Krishna is inconceivable to the material mind and senses. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas tasmi tatvataha, that he can be understood in truth only by devotional service. Atha Sri Krishna namadi namavet graham indre sevan mukhi hijivado swayam eva spurakyada. He reveals himself to the devotee imbued with the mood of service. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktam. He is very difficult to approach or understand just by the study of the Vedas, but he is easily approached or understood by his devotee, who by definition engage in his service. So to properly understand Krishna, we must engage in devotional service, because otherwise Krishna is unapproachable. He's actually unapproachable. So these contradictions can be appreciated by devotees. Otherwise, the subject is mysterious and incomprehensible and seems to be full of contradictions. When I entered the temple room here and came before the deities, the altar, I was looking at the pictures of the parampara and thinking, what a great responsibility you all have to pass on the message of Krishna, of our previous acharyas, in our line, in line with our line, in line with those acharyas, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our Srila Prabhupada, and in a way Gopi Paradadana Prabhu, who was so faithful to Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. One year, Gopi Paradidana Prabhu spent some time with me at our ashram in Santa Barbara, California. And I asked him a question that I thought would have been easy enough to answer on the basis of knowledge of Sanskrit. But he didn't want to answer without consulting the commentaries of the previous acharyas. He was so faithful to the acharyas, to the parampara, that even though it appeared to me that with his knowledge of Sanskrit he could have answered the question, but he didn't want to take any chance in making a mistake in the sense of saying something that was not supported by the previous acharyas. And that inspired in me great appreciation for him, because I felt completely confident that if I asked a question, he would not speculate. Of course, I would never have considered it to be speculation, but he wouldn't rely just on his knowledge of Sanskrit, but he would consult the previous acharyas. And of course, our Srila Prabhupada would always say that he is simply repeating the message of Krishna as he received it from his spiritual master, and that therefore his business was very easy. He simply repeated what he had heard. He mentioned the same point on numerous occasions in different contexts. One occasion that is very vivid in my mind was when he spoke at his last public preaching program, a Pandal program in downtown Bombay, in about April of 1977. And he said that people approach him and say, Swamiji, Swamiji, you have done something wonderful. And Srila Prabhupada said that he would reply, I have not done anything wonderful at all. If at all there is any credit to me, it is just that I have presented the message of Krishna as it is. I have just repeated the message as I have received it without adding or subtracting or making any compromise with mundane ideas. That said, if we look at Srila Prabhupada's purports, we will see that they are presented with his own examples in some cases, with his own phrasing. And that is also part of the disciplic succession. Even Vedavyas he divided the one Veda into four, and he made adjustments so that the subject could be more comprehensible to the audience. So that is also part of the art of preaching or teaching. And to do that, one must have realization. Without realization, one will be bound more or less to repeat in a parrot-like way, or to, as they say, cut and paste things from here and there and put together a nice arrangement of words. But to really be able to present the subject for the understanding of the audience in a way that will enter their hearts, one must have realization. And thus we come back to the first point, Atta Sri Krishna Namadina Bhavekra Nindre, that by service, Krishna reveals himself. His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu told me that once Srila Prabhupada had asked Guru Kripa Prabhu what the most important verse in the Vedic literature was. And Guru Kripa Prabhu very enthusiastically, emphatically replied, Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam. And Srila Prabhupada replied, no. Yasya deve parabhaktir yata deve tatagaro. That was Prabhupada's guiding principle. And it is through that process that we can understand the truths of the Vedas and present them to others. And of course, association. You're fortunate to have the association of each other and of the senior devotees who come and speak with you. Satam prasangat mama virya sambhida, that the discussions are relishable and they enable one to make spiritual advancement when they're discussed in the association of devotees, especially like-minded devotees. Swajati ashe stingde sadhu sangha satovare, like-minded devotees, and especially devotees who are more advanced. And I'm also thinking how in Srila Prabhupada's last days, he was translating the 13th chapter of the 10th canto. And as I'm sure you know, he was lying on his bed. If you see the photos or videos, you could see that he was emaciated. He hardly had the strength to speak. And the devotees, Pradyumna Prabhu, the Jayadvaita Swami, they would hold the microphone just up to Srila Prabhupada's mouth because he was so weak, his voice was so faint. And I happened to be there when he dictated one of the last purports. And in it he said, discuss Srimad Bhagavatam daily as much as possible. Srimad Bhagavatam is compiled by Vyas Mahamuni Krite in his mature state of realization. And he said, the more you discuss, the more the subject matter becomes clarified. So this is such an important principle. And one of Srila Prabhupada's last instructions, because the subject is very mysterious, and beyond mundane logic and reason, and by discussing the subject becomes clarified, which again is essential for our own understanding and progress, and also for our service of presenting the information to others. And this inquisitiveness, Maharaj Parikshit showed, is a necessary qualification for a student or disciple. Tadvidi pratena pariprashnena sevaya. All three, surrender, inquiry, and service. That's also one of the preliminary items, first of the 10 preliminary items of devotional service, Sadharma Pritcha, to inquire about eternal religious principles. That means that one is interested. Once we arranged a program for Srila Prabhupada at the Birla House in Bombay. The Birlas were the wealthiest family in India. The Birlas and the Tatas, but the Birlas. And Srila Prabhupada gave a brilliant lecture, just perfect for the audience. And then after the talk, he asked for questions. And nobody raised their hands. And afterwards, Srila Prabhupada commented that they weren't interested. There were no questions. Of course, later, in a more informal setting, Mrs. Birla in particular had a lot of questions. But, questions, serious questions mean that one is interested, one is concerned about the subject, one wants to learn the subject. And that eagerness is essential. But they should be genuine questions. You may know that in the beginning of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada introduced the practice of Istagosti as a regular function that every week the devotees in the temple would get together and discuss the philosophy. Later, the Istagostis, or the idea of Istagosti, became extended to include discussion of managerial issues. But initially, it was simply an occasion for the devotees to come together and discuss the philosophy. And ask questions. And he said that at one stage, Istagosti means to repeat what the spiritual master has said. He didn't want it to be an occasion for speculation. But he said that the questions should be serious. They should actually have importance and relevance. And then he gave an example, don't ask, how many miles high was the Trinavarta demon, or things that have more significance. That type of inquiry is important. So this is really how we are meant to occupy our time, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam and all the literature written in pursuance of Srimad Bhagavatam, and being steeped in it, immersed in it, and clarifying our own understanding of it, both for our own personal spiritual progress and for our service of communicating the information to others. A pure devotee ought to know well, it's our duty. It's our responsibility. When the Yamadutas went to take the soul of Ajamil, and they confronted the Vishnu Dutas, and in a way you could say they were thwarted in their effort to take Ajamil, they were defeated in their discussion. So they returned to Yamaraj and asked what happened. This has never happened before. And Srila Prabhupada comments that the Yamadutas were representing Yamaraj, he's one of the Mahajans, and that the servant who represents the master has to understand the master. He has to be well versed in the knowledge that the master has to offer. Otherwise, when they go out into the world and meet people, they may not represent the master properly, and they could be defeated because of having some defect in their own understanding. So this is very much part of our responsibility as devotees, as servants, to know the subject well. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, would you like to add something?
Well, I do remember the Brahmavi Mohan. I don't. Oh, can you hear me outside? No. if they were in here, they would.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this mic has to be. Is it working? No, it's not working. Okay. I was remembering, you mentioned the Brahma, the Mohan Leela.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know which part of the Brahma, the Mohan Leela that you were hearing Prabhupada, but I know there is one part. After Lord Brahma manifests where Krishna manifests to Lord Brahma, okay, his mystic potency. So first he manifests all the cowherd boys, which was an amazing task because it was down to the psychology of each one perfectly. And Prabhupada, the purport mentions, even twins, are a little different. So each person has a unique individuality. So Krishna manifested that, and then he manifested, after that he manifested, they were all Vishnu forms with helmets and, jewels, and it was so beautiful. Then he manifested that in relationship with the devotees, and the best devotees who are chanting and hearing, that are putting tulsi garlands around the Lord. Then Lord Brahma saw the incredible relationship between Krishna and those devotees as Krishna was benedicting them and inspiring them to serve. Then he saw all moving and non-moving living entities also serving, so that everyone was serving Krishna. And then after that he saw every aspect for Krishna. He saw kama, material desire, karma, kala, time, swabhav, nature, guna. So he's seeing that actually everything is serving each of these, living entities, serving Krishna. So Krishna's manifesting more and more of his mystic potency. And it just becomes absolutely inconceivable because each form has all these things surrounding and he's kind of witnessing it. And then, as you were mentioning, then it's very practical. Prabhupada brings the philosophy down to practice. So it's all inconceivable. You can't understand God because God, Prabhupada says, he does what he desires. So how do you figure out how God's nature and how he manifests? There's no frame of reference. He's not under any other laws. What's your frame of reference? Logic is usually based on cause and effect. So, from the cause you figure out the effect, from the effect you figure out the cause. But Krishna is causeless. It's just his will. So it becomes so inconceivable, and then, Prabhupada, you're reading all this, and then Prabhupada brings it down, that how do we understand? And then he says, by, hearing the Bhagavatam. and studying the Bhagavatam and the association of devotees, then something happens beyond the intellect. I remember Prabhupada said, it's not the guru puts you an electric shock, Prabhupada said. But he said, it's not either just an intellectual process. But when you apply your intelligence in the service of Krishna, then something manifests beyond the intelligence. And to understand God, it's just way beyond our intelligence. And we use our intelligence, but it's beyond our intelligence. And I was thinking, because I'm giving these classes, like, we have so much knowledge, and it's knowledge. We can actually logically understand how so many things that we've understood is like, we have this knowledge. We can talk about anything. But at the same sense, it's not that we went into a cave, you know, with a candle and you know, thought about it ourselves. And, you know, you even had your own story, which you tell how you tried to figure it out by yourself, and you were very bright, right? But then you met Prabhupada, and the second it became clear. And what became clear was very logical, very rational, made a lot of sense, but you couldn't approach it, the nature of Krishna. And then when you were speaking, I was also thinking of the Brahma Samhita, Pantastu Koti Satta Vatsara, so, you know, by the speed of mind for so many lifetimes, how you could approach, and the Ishopanishads, Tadejati, Tadnaijati, Tadure, Tadvantike, Tadantarasya, you know, walks, doesn't walk, you know, is near, is far, you know. It just is, you know, it's Krishna's will, you know, how things manifest. And there's a process, and that's Krishna revealing himself. I was always also thinking that as Krishna is a person, then how do you understand a person? There's no way you can understand a person just intellectually. We always kind of try to figure people out, and we come to like wrong conclusions. And then we have a relationship with them, and then they let us know what they're like. Oh, it's so much. So even in a mundane flat field, to understand a person requires a relationship for that person to reveal himself. So if you want to understand God, I mean, even an ordinary person, if you capture him, you torture him, you still can't know them. In fact, you'll know them less, because they won't want to show them their side. So, I was thinking this is all very technical and comprehensive stuff, and, you know, and by studying it in the association of devotees, somehow or other we get some understanding of it.
So, would any of you like to say anything or ask anything?
I have a question. You said that it's a consciousness of...
Yeah, that's a very good question. In fact, this very same question was discussed in the philosophical subcommittee of the GBC, in which Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was the chairman, and I was one of the members. This came up in relation to a certain logic that was put forward. It's been put forward by different people in different contexts, but in that particular case, it was related to the question of the fall of the jiva. And these two devotees had gone to some scholar outside of ISKCON, and they were learning the sandarbhas from him. And They got a certain understanding from him. And then they put forward the logic, and I've heard the same logic in other contexts, that Srila Prabhupada is following Jiva Goswami or Rupa Goswami. And therefore, because we know that Jiva Goswami says this, then Srila Prabhupada must also believe it, because he also follows Jiva Goswami. And if Srila Prabhupada says something any different, it's not because he actually accepts it as Siddhanta, but he said it as a preaching strategy. Now, there are some problems with that logic. The first problem is cast in a certain framework. The first problem is that we are meant to understand Jiva Goswami or Rupa Goswami or the previous acharyas through Srila Prabhupada. We're not meant to understand Srila Prabhupada through Rupa Goswami or Jiva Goswami. It's sort of backwards. The other problem is that unless Srila Prabhupada tells us that something is a preaching strategy, then how do we know? And where do we stop? You know, it's like, and then the idea came up of like certain Mahavakyas, that these are the essential truths. But other things may not be true. They may just be. But again, like unless Srila Prabhupada tells us that, how do we know? And so that's I think these are important points. You know, with Jiva Goswami, we read in Srila Prabhupada's purports that Jiva Goswami did not really reject Parakya Ras, but for the sake of preaching, if you want, you know, for the sake of a particular audience, he presented it as such. That we learn from Srila Prabhupada, from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, from acharyas who are in a position to make that determination. You know, people who are accepted as on that level in our line. So, you know, we can repeat what they say about Jiva Goswami and Parakya Ras and Swakya Ras, because they've told us. But I don't think it would do us well to make the same determination on our own, you know, on our level. That is something that, you know, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and acharyas on that level can make. Maharaj, would you like to?
I think one of the points that Giriraj Swami is getting at is you have to protect faith. Because if faith is gone, you won't understand anything. And you'll be on your own. In other words, you'll be interpreting Prabhupada by your own. Now, I have personal experience in my own life. I have a fertile brain, which has some advantages and disadvantages, of through my devotional kriya saying, why has Prabhupada done this? And through my vision, it didn't look right. I couldn't understand it. I could have had a better idea. And so many times, in time, I find out that Prabhupada was right. When I mature. And there's, a very dear, I mean, presume that he can't be any more dear. And I had a conference seminar of young scholars. And one person chose the topic of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. You know, the things he said that was so heavy. You know, how do you do, you know, rascal scientist and this and that, and so many things, right? So I felt a little uncomfortable, so I spoke to, you know, Pradyumna comes. And Pradyumna, he said, he was so strong about whatever you try to reconcile and understand, you have to maintain the culture of faith. And Pradyumna said, because faith is the precursor to knowledge. If you don't have faith, you're not going to be able to understand anything. It'll just stop at your own intelligence. Well, this doesn't sound right. But there's so much that's beyond our own intelligence that's true. And if we don't have faith, we won't make the effort to figure it out. And then Pradyumna gave two examples. It was so nice. One was a scholar in the Gaudiya Math called Professor Sanyal. And he was known for his faith. And it was such a nice example. Pradyumna was giving just to show how this culture must be there. And then he said that one time they brought something, Professor Sanyal brought it to the publisher. And then the publisher said, you know, this word is not used in the proper way. And Professor Sanyal said, Bhakti Siddhanta used it in that way. He said, well, the dictionary says it's this. He said, change the dictionary. And then the other thing he said, great scholars can go back and sometimes find a mistake in the commentaries of Acharyas. Some word that's wrong or something that's not correct, obviously. He said they never say he's wrong. They say Rishi Uchu, the sage said, and then they say something else. But there's a culture. So that has to be maintained, and a humility, you know. So, you know, in terms of the Jiva issue, you know, Gaur Govinda Maharaj, you know, he said, well, this says this and Prabhupada said this. He just wanted to say both things, not to say, oh, Prabhupada's wrong, it's a preaching strategy, or, you know, no, it's like this. Prabhupada said this and Prabhupada also said this. You know, and as Giriraj Swami was saying, really, philosophical understanding is practical. You know, it's practical. I mean, these minor differences here and there, or, you know, you can entertain, it says this, and it says, I can't understand, I can't reconcile it. You know, I'm not going to go against my own conscience, you know, or my, you know, or whatever. But I'm also going to have a lack of faith in my own absolute understanding and, you know, give credence that, you know, maybe I'm not understanding what Prabhupada said. I can't understand it this way, but maybe I'm not understanding what Prabhupada said. You know, something like that on a particular issue. And then maybe in the future I will understand, or I'll understand what Prabhupada meant, or, you know, unless it's like a key, you know, core issue you have to resolve, and then you, in consultation with the other Vaishnavas, you will.
And on that particular point about the fall of the jiva, I discuss with many devotees, and they believed, and I also believe that that Srila Prabhupada believed that. It came up once in Bombay, like, how could we leave Krishna? And, he gave the example of one of his personal servants who had left him. You could say, well, how could he do that? He was with Srila Prabhupada. What better position could he have been in? And what could he gain by leaving? And, but he left. He had his minute independence, and he left. I mean, there are certainly arguments on both sides, and as Dhanadhar Swami said, Srila Prabhupada said different things in different contexts. But the consensus is that it wasn't a preaching strategy, but that Prabhupada actually had that conviction. And then when they asked, well, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that, you know, one who goes to his abode never returns to the material world. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, that's true. That once you make the mistake of coming into the material world, and then you go back, you won't likely make the same mistake again because you've learned your lesson. Do you have more to your question?
Yeah, that's a very good explanation, but I really want to understand truth. It's, if possible, it's not so principal question for me, but that point that Anurdhara Maharaj said that Prabhupada has statements, both statements, that we were with Krishna and we now were at a spiritual world. And is there any explanation of those statements of Srila Prabhupada that no one falls from spiritual world? Does one can explain those statement proponent of the theory that we were with Krishna and then we came here?
Do you understand the question?
I understand the question.
I didn't.
Okay, I didn't have it on this guy.
Sorry.
Well, I understand something of the question. Well, let me say what I was going to say. It's the same thing, is that Prabhupada also said that it's not that important.
That's what I was going to say.
And then, not only that, but the history of all traditions, right? They don't get into this. I've actually discussed this with a professor of mine, a professor that I know who is a Vaishnava and a scholar. He said through all traditions, they have the same answer that Prabhupada gave. That this origin is not important. The importance is getting out. That's really in all traditions, actually. And my friend wrote a commentary in the Yoga Sutras, and this point came up. And he said, in all traditions, they don't really get into this. So the fact of the matter, and then Bhaktivinoda Thakur also said, you know, you're trying to understand, you know, a spiritual event in temporal language. And he used, how can you understand it through the dirt of words? So you have a lot of problems trying to understand these issues. So I think it's reasonable to understand that they are inconceivable and you're not going to wrap your intelligence around it so well. And that, you know, chant more, you know, practice more, And some realizations will come of what that spiritual realm is and what its connection is here.
Yeah. On that point of Swakiras and Parakiras, I mean, when I was first coming to see Srila Prabhupada and hear Srila Prabhupada, one man asked him about Krishna, you know, having affairs with other people's wives, and basically saying that Krishna was committing adultery. And Srila Prabhupada replied that actually, you know, everything belongs to Krishna. You know, all women belong to Krishna, and your wife also belongs to Krishna. So you're actually the one. So, from a certain point of view, you can say, well, that's swakya ras, but that's tattva, and not really ras. It's tattva. Everyone belongs to Krishna. They're all Krishna's energy, and he's the proprietor. So, but yeah, I think overall, as we began with the idea that Krishna reveals himself in relation to our surrender and service, and that should be our main effort. Sometime one disciple of Prabhupada's had a problem. Well, a few of them had problems with some of the statements in the Puranas, you know, in the Bhagavatam. It just didn't make sense logically. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, that, you know, that's what it says. I'm sorry, I cannot go beyond what it says. And then there was one devotee who actually left for a while because he was so bewildered by these, what seemed to be unbelievable statements in the scripture. And then he wrote Prabhupada, and, you know, Prabhupada answered the questions, but he said ultimately these issues are not so important. It's really much more important that you continue to serve Krishna and chant the holy names, and you know, don't give up the process of chanting and serving Krishna on account of these relatively minor issues. So I mean, I know from my own very recent experience that there's a practice in Vraj, in one of the sampradayas, and I asked two of my esteemed godbrothers about it, and they didn't really know. I mean, they knew of the practice, but they didn't know why or what our position on it is. But I could tell from their mood that they were here, you know, basically to advance in Krishna consciousness and deepen their service to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, and it just wasn't really an issue why a particular sampradaya does things in a certain way. And so I stopped asking, because I sort of had a feeling that anyone, that question is in my mind somehow, that particular question intrigues me, but I stopped asking because I know it's not really important in terms of our personal spiritual practices or service. And I guess want to stick to the essence. But do you have more?
No.
We don't want to silence you, but so if you do have more, you can.
You can answer this question.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. As Dandan Maharaj said, the other traditions, they don't have so much answer for this. So I met one of the Sri Vishnu's, Sri Sampradaya's scholars, devotees. So they made an allegation against ISKCON in particular, Gaudiya Sampradaya, that if you are coming, falling from the spiritual world, it brings out many faults in the philosophy, such as that Krishna let you go and Krishna is partial, and the spiritual, the usual problems, the spiritual world is not perfect and so on. But their philosophy is that they have understanding of this is that the living beings in the material world is the greater, it's going on for time immemorial. There is no origin which you can find out. So they stop there, conveniently they have that much, but they don't go beyond that. So neither they can give full explanation, but at the same time they can pinpoint mistakes in the philosophy. So one is that for us that we should not be dwelling so much in this point, but as we represent our sampradaya to others, then is it no way that we can convincingly satisfy them, or that kind of not dwelling to the subject also applies to not able to answer them fully?
The question comes up, and there are problems with any answer. But you said they conveniently stop the discussion at a certain point. But then if someone has that probing mood, they can also challenge that. Well, what about before that? I think we're back to the two points, that it's inconceivable. One God brother who's goes very deep into the scripture and is also aware of other traditions, he made the point that the problem comes when we try to envision it as a movie scenario. Okay, 1 minute you're dancing with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, and then the next minute you're in the material world. That leaves questions. But he said that sort of linear, movie script scenario is not what we're talking about. And I've also heard from authorities that you cannot really that a conditioned soul cannot really understand the answer to the question. So I think that's part of the answer. That it's beyond our comprehension in our conditioned state. And then the other is that this is not the important question, how we got here. The question is how to get out. I mean, when I give the example that Prabhupada gave, that you're drowning in the ocean, and someone comes along with a boat to save you, and you say, "Well, wait a minute, I don't want to get on the boat until I find out how I got here." So when I give that example, even very intelligent people laugh, because it really shows how absurd that mentality is. So, I would say by and large, Srila Prabhupada has given us enough tools to preach to pretty much any audience. And we have to, try to, look in the toolbox and take out what's appropriate for the work at hand. And Maharaj?
Mm.
Yeah, I think
when you deal with the question of origins and the nature of God itself, yeah, any way you look at it, it's going to be problems. Let's say something's existing eternally. Okay, so what's reasonable? Reasonable is how things fit into our perception of how things work in this world. Do we have any experience of something without an origin? Well, then what's the other logical thing? Well, then it's reality started at a particular time. You know, and there's nothing before. Either, we don't have an experience of something that goes back forever. Our mind just explodes. And the other option is that reality started at a particular time. I'm just talking about God. You know, we can't understand God. It goes back forever. It just, think about that logically. But what about when does it start? And back, there has to be an origin. But if you start that reality began at one time, there was nothing before, does that make sense either? So I think we just have to be humble that, you know, God is, and God and God's energies and how they move, especially the origin of things, it just does, it's beyond our comprehension. And I think what Giriraj Swami says, if they poke holes, then you poke holes. You know? I mean, the you know, well, we've always been here. Well, can you explain that? How? What about before? When did it begin? I mean, it's there's problems in either one.
Yeah, that concept of eternal, something that has no beginning and no end, was difficult for me when I joined. Because in relation to Krishna, how what does that mean? Something doesn't have a beginning. Just it took a while to just get used to the idea that, you know, Krishna's Sanatan and the living entity Sanatan and Krishna's abode is Sanatan. But once I asked, at that time I was convinced, but I asked him because people would say to me, you know, you say that Krishna is the origin of everything, and but what is Krishna's origin? So I mentioned that question to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada replied, you can tell them that as far as our information goes, Krishna is the original cause of all causes. Now, if you can find something that is the cause of Krishna, we will worship that something. But until then, you should worship Krishna. Any other? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.